All right, joining us today is a true pioneer in women's mixed martial arts, who is currently the 12th ranked flyweight in the UFC, Roxanne Modafferi. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
It's absolutely our pleasure. Hope your holiday season was good. I read on your blog you got a little bit sick. Are you feeling back to good these days, it seems?
Yep, back to normal.
Okay, good. That's really good to hear. So, you know, we've got your big retirement fight coming up at UFC 271 on February 12th. But before we talk about that, I'd really like to rewind things back to the beginning of your career, fighting in Japan, 2003. I believe it would put you about 21 years old, junior in college, fighting for Smack Girl. Tell us a little bit about what that was like.
It was really exciting. I had no idea what it meant to be a pro fighter. Like, I loved jiu-jitsu. I did some, you know, kickboxing and karate, and I was like really into anime. I still am into anime, but I was like, oh man, is this gonna change me into some kind of beast? Like, what's gonna happen to me? Like, I didn't know, right? And it was really cool. Actually, I feel like fighting is kind of like entering a different dimension. Like, my brain like works differently in the cage than it does outside, which is kind of cool. I guess that's the zone. But yeah, so I went to Japan and, you know, I joined a gym there, and the jiu-jitsu sensei was like, oh yeah, sure, we can get you a fight. I was like, oh really? Now? Like, do I need more? And he's like, no, go ahead. So they got me a fight with Smack Girl, and I don't know, like I trained the kickboxing, I trained the jiu-jitsu, and then I fought. Like, back then there weren't really MMA classes, which is totally different than now. Like, man, I've seen such an evolution of the sport. You know, like, before I just, you know, did my jiu-jitsu class and kickboxing and then fought, but it was cool.
What's the culture like there as far as women fighters? Because, you know, here, especially then, it was virtually unheard of. Even now, still some people seem to not be accepting it for whatever reasons. What was Japan like at that time?
Back in the day, female fighters were a different category, you know, like they referred to our clothes as costumes rather than fight clothes. Which confused me because they're speaking Japanese. They're like, koshitumu wa doko desu ka? What is koshitumu? Like, I don't understand. And, you know, it was, I do believe that female fighters were lower level than men at the time, you know. But it was like even more so, and there were like specific fans kind of just for them. It was more like entertainment than sports, you know. So I went through that, and I was more into the sports than the entertainment aspect of it. But after like a decade, you know, fighters like Megumi Fuji started getting fights in Shuto and more like high level male organizations. And then it started like females started being accepted as actual athletes, you know? So that's where we are now. I believe there's still like amateurs are still kind of like, there's more the entertainment aspect of it, but now like females are recognized as athletes, I think.
As for sure, which is, it's so great to see this evolution of the sport. You know, I've got a young daughter, and I've always pointed out fighters to her ever since she was little, not because I wanted her to be a fighter, but just because I wanted her to see that women can do anything, even get in a cage and fight people. And you were always a bit of inspiration to her as well, because you don't look like a lot of people would expect a fighter to look like, and you like a lot of things she does too as well. So hi. I've had my eye on your career for a long time, and I'm surprised to hear that, you know, you just started training in Japan and then almost instantly into a fight, because you saw a lot of success over there. You fought Jennifer Howe twice. You have two victories over her. And at the time, as far as I can tell, she was considered at least the top fighter in America, one of the best in the world.
Well, I trained for a while in America before I went to Japan. Like,
yes,
a bunch of stuff under my belt before I actually fought. I just expected more training before I actually got my debut, so it was kind of like a surprise. But thankfully, my jiu-jitsu was good enough that I was able to jiu-jitsu everybody and, like, win that way.
Yeah, I should clarify. I think you've been doing taekwondo since, what, 13?
Yeah.
And amongst many other, and judo as well. Uh-huh. And then, of course, the kickboxing.
Mm-hmm. And then, I went back and forth. Basically, after I finished college, I was flown back and forth. You know, sometimes I fought in Japan, sometimes I fought in the States.
We've noticed that had to be a little stressful, I would think, because like you won the Fatal Femmes Fighting Championship at lightweight in LA, and then you flew right back to Japan, it would seem, and then you fought in the one grand tournament, where you fought three times in one night and you won that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, the K Grace. Yeah, the K Grace is the open weight tournament, correct?
Yeah.
How is that wear and tear going back and forth like that?
You mean by weight class or just by?
No, I mean just the amount of traveling that you're doing. I mean, you come to America, you fight here in the States, and then you fly to Japan a few months, you're fighting in Japan, and then you're back in America.
Oh, I don't remember how much time passed, but I was young, man. I was durable. I could do anything. Like, bring it on. Like, I always felt like finding a fight was the hardest thing for me. I was like, I'm here in Japan. Like, please give me a fight. And it was hard to find somebody my size in Japan. They managed to sometimes, but then like it was hard for the promotions in America to fly me because I was expensive because I was now in another country. So I always asked Kirik, my first MMA coach ever, to like join me, like because he lived in Massachusetts. So like the promoter would fly me from Japan and then pay for his ticket, which was cheaper because it was America. So I was always like trying to find a fight anywhere.
Yeah. So when you were finding like so many different like major organizations, you eventually end up being in like a pretty groundbreaking season of Tough, being like the inaugural season for women's fighting, like ever really, after Dana White had said all the things about how he'd never have women's fighting in the UFC and everything. How was that like experience for you, not only in the house, but like being a part of that?
Man, it was so cool. Like, it's hard to see it as it's happening, you know, because you don't know how it's going to turn out. But now in hindsight, like, I've been a part of so many groundbreaking things. Like, I fought in Hook and Shoot, which was like the first all-female card in America, then female Fatal Femme Fighting, and then Tough and The Ultimate Fighter season 18, you know, which first had females. It was like, oh, it's so cool. Like, I found out about it on Twitter. Excuse me. And like had to immediately ask for time off and like book a ticket like that day to make it in time. It was just so cool to be a part of that. And then to be able to be on season 26 of The Ultimate Fighter, which introduced the flyweight division. I was like, oh, this is wonderful. This is so cool. Like, I've had such a cool career, man. This is awesome.
Were there any like big differences between the two seasons as far as like, I don't know, just like the dynamics in the houses and everything like that?
Day and night. It's day and night completely.
Well, that first season was Rousey and Tate, correct?
Yeah.
Was there a lot of tension on the set there? Because, I mean, you know, the media plays it up, like, of course. But when you're there in it, could you feel tension in the air? Or was that more played up for the cameras?
No, we could feel the tension in the air for sure. Yeah. And then there was a little more drama amongst the contestants as well.
And how did that compare with the, you were on Team Gaethje in the second time on Tough, and Eddie Alvarez was the opposing coach, correct?
Yeah, and at that point, like, time had passed as well in the fight world and, like, what am I trying to say? Elevated training methods as well, and people were being referred to as athletes as opposed to just fighters, you know? Yeah. I was like, I'm an athlete? Like, what? Like, it was, like, I wasn't used to hearing that, you know? I was just a fighter, but now I'm an athlete. So all the women were, like, super dedicated. They wanted that title belt, right? So, like, I woke up, like, at 5 in the morning every morning, and I went for a jog, and there was Barb Honchak, there was Lauren, there was, like, people were up and, like, doing yoga. Nico was doing yoga. Like, everyone was, like, focused. Nico and I went to bed at, like, 9 p.m. every night. Like, it was drama, more focused, you know, and, yeah, it was different.
So how do you feel like that like set you up? Because really, if you look at the end of that season, that really set you in kind of like, if you look at your career overall, like you progressed so much after that season and into like your run into the UFC, like after all that time, like how do you feel like that really set you up for your run that you've had in the UFC?
Yeah, that was such a great opportunity for me to be able to be on Tufts 26 and then be into the UFC again. You know, I had not made the cut for a Tough 18, and frankly, my skills weren't up to par. I just moved back from Japan, and I was, like, feeling broken, and, like, my body just was feeling broken. And then I got with John Wood from Syndicate. He's an amazing trainer. He did so much for me, and I really, like, stopped plateauing as I felt, and then, like, my skills went up. Also, Lorenzo Pavlica, my personal trainer, physical trainer, Like, he healed my back, he healed my neck, like, my shoulders. Like, I had so much stuff, but just through the strengthening, like, he helped me. So, like, I had a good run in Invicta where I was able to, like, get myself back going again.
And oh, yeah.
Tough happened, and I was, like, feeling strong and healthy and, like, I can do this. So that was, like, okay, go. And so it was, like, my opportunity to get in there, and I was able to show what I had worked on.
Your striking and your overall game has really, really improved since you've been out here in Vegas, as you said, under Wood at Syndicate. And it's a little bit unusual, you know, for fighters to have kind of a later career resurgence. I think it's hard for fighters to have the discipline to learn a new thing or to improve on an area. We see a lot of people plateau. Yeah. And so I was really impressed by what you've done since you've been out here. And, you know, now we're coming around. It's, you know, 2021 ends. We're at 2022, and you've announced that your upcoming fight at UFC 271 against Casey O'Neill is going to be your retirement fight. What was some of the thinking that led you to that?
I never really wanted to think about a fight being my last fight, to be honest with you. It was about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, where I started noticing that, like, in practice, getting hit in the head would hurt more than it used to. Like, I used to be able to just eat everything and just train hard, but now I'm like, oh, can you go lighter? Like, oh, can you go lighter? Like, crap, like, that shot rocked me. Like, it used to not do that. So I was like, man, like, I should probably start thinking about my brain health and, like, calling, like, figuring out when I need to safely stop, because I promised myself that. Like, my dad always, like, sends me articles like, look at this boxer, he has whatever CTE, like, you know, he can't talk to her straight now. Like, all right, I'm like, okay, dad, like, I promise, like, once I start, you know, before I start having brain problems, I'll quit, like, I promise. So I promised both myself and him that, you know, I'm still good now. Like, I've started wearing headgear, and that's great. Like, I feel good. It's hard to grapple with headgear on.
Yeah.
But I was like, all right, let's make it 50 fights. You know, that's a great number. I'm breaking a world record, I think, because a lot of places don't count my Ultimate Fighter fights as fights, because they're like exhibition or whatever. So that's 47 or something fights. I lost track, but that's like a world record, you know, I'll be breaking. So
we all know it's 50. That's nonsense. 50. So Dana can have it on TV. I do believe that, you know, they can't have the results leaking or whatever, but those fights should count. It's 50.
Thank you. So I'm like, all right, I'll make this my last fight. And that was my thought process. Like, doing wrestling class, I was like, dude, that's for young people. Like, wrestling's hard. It hurts my back. So I'm like, all right, I just want to do jiu-jitsu. Like, I don't even want to punch anybody anymore. Like, I've reached that point where, like, I don't want to punch anyone. I just want to twist your arm and make you tap. So I'm going to hopefully get a great day job, have some ideas, do jiu-jitsu, get married to my fiance. Look at how pretty I am. Nice.
Congratulations on that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
So is this you're saying this is it? You know, a lot of fighters retire and then maybe they come back or they get that itch, but you think this is it as far as punching people?
Yeah, like, I still want to compete jiu-jitsu. You know, there seems to be a lot more opportunities now than there used to be. I'm excited for that. But yeah, no more punching people. I'm done.
So no BKFC for Roxanne Modafari.
Oh no.
Well, we would love to see you in some jiu-jitsu tournaments. Absolutely. Is this the final fight on your UFC contract, or do you have any more after that?
It is.
Well, the timing worked out well for that. You know, what do you think of fighting someone like Casey O'Neill? She's 8-0. She's young. She's upcoming. What are your thoughts on her?
I feel like she almost has a similar style to me, where, like, we march forward and just try to slug them and then take them down. Like, I feel like I've seen that from her. So that's cool. Like, you know, I saw tape on her, and I think that I can beat her. You know, she absolutely could possibly beat me. So it's going to be a great fight. I hope to have a nice little brawl with her and have some beautiful violence. Just want a race battle.
Any plans on what you're going to wear at the weigh-in?
Yes, I figured it out.
Did you? Excellent. Well, we're looking forward.
I can't tell you, but
yeah, marvelous. We'll be tuning in to see that as well. Finally, you know, where can our listeners find you on social media if they're not following you already?
On Instagram, I'm Roxy Fighter, and then also Twitter is Roxy Fighter, and then on Facebook is Facebook my name.
All right, and we'll make sure everybody tunes in. UFC 271, February 12th ESPN preliminaries. Thank you so much for being here, Roxanne. We really appreciate it, and good luck to you in February 12th.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for following my career.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. What's up, everybody? Joining us today is Tyler Escoto, who is a welterweight in the Cage Warriors promotion. He's going to be making his debut on their March 4th card in San Diego against Jamie Lynch. Tyler, yeah, thank you fight. So second much fight. For joining us. Second fight.
Yeah, second fight.
Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem, man. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, man, we're excited. So listen, we'd love for our listeners to get a chance to know you a little bit. You're fairly new on the fight scene. Just had, two fights now?
Yeah, two professional fights.
So let's rewind it back a little bit. What initially got you into fighting?
Honestly, man, rest in peace to my grandfather. My grandfather did. He got me when I was young, watching WWE, you know, getting all those fucking belts, you know, just... he really grew me up on that, you know, just good old professional wrestling, you know. And then when I got older, it kind of graduated to like the wrestling mat. And when I was training for football, I was a big boy, you know. I was a big boy when I was in high school. I was like 240 in high school. Jeez. And I was trying to do something, some cross training for football, and I just decided to do a Muay Thai, just because it was just something different, just kind of like something I wanted to like dabble in. I didn't really take it serious, but I started doing Muay Thai for cross training for football and wrestling, and just kind of fell in love with it, man. You know, it's kind of like I started off in a small school called Kuktar in Salinas, California. And my sensei, Master Vince Vanderlipe, he really took me under his wing when he first saw me. He saw me, you know, kind of just a big guy, big wrestler. And their MMA team needed like a wrestler. They had striking, they had like a couple grapplers, but they didn't have like a wrestler, you know? So he really brought me under his wing. And that's where like it all kind of formed, was my sensei just, you know, you can really do this, you know, like you can do this for real. And and actually have a career with it. And I was like, all right, bet. And I kind of had that dream already, but it wasn't like I wanted football. I wanted to go D1 football. Actually settled for wrestling in college rather than football. And it kind of just led me here, man.
Nice. Well, with that like wrestling background, you said you have that Muay Thai background as well. Did that like that really kind of set you up as far as like transitioning to MMA, right?
No, absolutely. Fucking just being a college wrestler just really it put things in perspective, man. You know, I respect all those, I respect every wrestler that gets in the mat. And I respect even more the college wrestlers, you know. It's a huge grind, bro. It's like, it's a grind that I wasn't ready for. I was doing a lot of dumb things and other things in college that wasn't really helping me progress on the wrestling mat. But I definitely learned I definitely learned the grit. I definitely learned how to, like, you know, cardio's king. You know, you can always push yourself a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, and being from that, like, Northern California wrestling, that's such a hub for, like, so many great, like, wrestling schools and stuff like that. So I'd imagine you are used to being on the mat with high-level competition, like, at a young age, obviously.
Yeah. Even in high school, the California scene is pretty intense.
Nice. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, and like I said too, I was a big boy. I was like 240, bro, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was wrestling. At 220s, and so I was dealing with our heavyweight. Our heavyweight in high school was like top five in the state. Hildy Manzer, that's my boy. You know, it was tough. You know, our 197 pounder, Josiah Pulele. He did all right in the section, you know. He was trying to make it a state, but you know, that state tournament is tough, man.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest state tournaments to win in the country.
Fuck yeah, bro. It's so many different levels. Nasty. Yeah. It's nasty.
What gym are you training out of right now?
Right here, bro. Premier Muay Thai, Premier Fight and Fitness, and then Athos Jiu-Jitsu.
And how long have you been there?
I've been with Athos for like a little over a year. And then I've been with Premier for about a year and a half, 2 years.
Nice. It's finding a nice home there for the, as far as the striking goes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My head coach, of Premier, Fight and Fitness, Zach Shepard. He also goes by, Zach Savage, Savage Striking. He's a genius, man. He's honestly a genius. You know, he's very humble. He's always learning. You know, you find a lot of coaches that stick with their style, you know, which is, man, nothing wrong with it, you know. But I like someone who's always humble enough to learn as well, you know. He's learning like every week, you know. He's showing me when I'm not in camp, he's showing me something. Hey, bro, like, try this, you know, or I think this would kind of like suit you a little bit better, or add this to your game, you know, type of stuff. You know, he's always giving me new content. He's always giving me, just giving me new content, you know, making me want to learn, you know, making my mind expand, which is, you know, crucial in the sport.
Absolutely. MMA is definitely a sport of constant evolution. And you're right. A lot of coaches and fighters can kind of get stagnant after they reach a certain point. And yeah, to be already having that, you know, the style and the mentality to be constantly evolving is pretty sick. How would you describe your fight style to our listeners?
I used to be just a fucking wrestler, bro. You know what I'm saying, dog? But ever since I've been with Zach, man, I'm turning into a nice little scrapper with the ground game, you know? Like I said, like when I was an amateur, I didn't really have the striking skills. Like I said, I started striking when I was in high school, and I wasn't even taking it serious, you know. Mm-hmm. Even in college, I wasn't even taking it serious. I really started striking in probably like 2017 or so. So my first striking coach, Vince Vanderlipe, and Coach Andrew Kelly, they put a good fundamentals in me, you know. So I got good fundamentals. And I just kind of just complicate the fundamentals a little bit, and I can always rely on my grappling game. If you see my first fight with Cage Warriors, you wouldn't think I'm a wrestler. I forgot I was a wrestler, you know. I forgot what got me to the show, and I stuck with my striking, and did me well. Wasn't enough, but did me well. But yeah, man, I'm a scrapper with the grappling game.
Well, yeah, and I saw a lot of your highlights through your Instagram from that fight, and I was like, noticed it looked pretty crisp. You rocked him a few times when you were on your feet, so it's not that you're not that far behind. You're right there anyway. So
thank you, bro. I give all my credit to Andrew Kelly, Vince Vanderlipe, and nowadays Zach Shepard for sure. Everything he's taught me, everything on my feet. I respect him a lot.
Well, speaking of that Cage Warriors fight, how does it feel to be like a part of a promotion like Cage Warriors, that, you know, they've produced so much high level UFC talent, Bellator talent? You're on Fight Pass every time you fight, so you've got so many eyes on you. How does it feel to already be at that level, like just right off the bat?
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. You know, not because it's only, you know, a high number one promotion in Europe. You know, it's pretty gnarly. And to be on this platform for my first fights, you know, I think it says a lot to who I am as a fighter, you know. I don't want these fucking, you know, scrappy fights. I don't want these, like, I don't want these fights that people are just going to feed and that I know I'm going to win. And, you know, I'm not going to learn, you know. I'm not going to learn from those fights, you know. Yeah, I learned I got hands, but I already know that, you know what I'm saying? I know I can strike. I know I can strike with the best. So might as well just throw me in the deep end, you know. Let me swim. I know I'm not going to sink. I might struggle a little bit, but let me swim, you know?
Mm-hmm. So with that being said, you do have your a fight coming up on March 4th against Jamie Lynch. What do you think about that matchup, and how do you feel like you'll be able to go in there and, like, make your statement with this being your second fight in the promotion?
I like the matchup, man. You know, He's a good guy, you know. I think I trained with him a couple times around here. San Diego has like a kind of like a close-knit MMA scene, so we all kind of intertwine somehow or someday, you know. But he's good, man. He's a dope guy. I've learned that he's a doctor, which is pretty sick, you know. It's props to him. Sure. His grappling game, you know, he definitely wants to grapple with me, you know. That's one thing for sure I know he wants to do. I know, looking at my last fight, I know for a fact that he doesn't want to stand with me. And seeing his last couple fights, I don't think he wants to stand with me. So I'm going to put some hands on him. I'm not going to let him take him down, or take me down, I should say. I think I'll be able to take him down with some confidence, man, you know. I'm not gonna sit here and say I'm gonna land every shot, but I definitely think I could get a couple takedowns on him, and I think I could stuff every single one of his takedowns. Thank you to Athos Jiu-Jitsu, Michael Perez, and Andre Galvoa.
And so, how does it feel? Also, like, although it's a huge MMA promotion over in Europe now, they've started to do some of these cards down in like San Diego and different parts of the U.S. Like, do you like that, or do you want to go over there and also get some fights over in Europe and stuff like that too?
I like it here, man. You know, I like it here. It makes my life a little bit easier, just so I don't have to like deal with that whole traveling stuff. Yeah. But I think it'd be good for me to like experience that early on in my career. But I'm not gonna push it yet. You know, I'd stay in the States, just my preference. But if they want me to go to London and be one of them, be one of the wankers over there, you know, I'll be down to do that too.
Now, everybody probably noticed we're all smoking a little bit of cannabis on this episode here.
Yeah.
How do you feel about cannabis and training? Like, do you use it to help you recover? Do you use it just purely, you know, recreational? Do you mix it all? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm a mix of all of it, you know. I've been smoking since I was young, man. You know, it's kind of been a part of my life since I was young. So it's definitely just kind of like who I am, man. You know, I love coming home from a hard session and, you know, smoking a little bit and taking a nice nap and getting ready for work and then do it again, you know. But I definitely use it in camp. I definitely use it a little bit smarter, you know. I'm not smoking all the time. I am smoking, I'm trying to get a little bit more CBD in my system, you know. I do a lot of drops, but I try to vaporize some CBD a little bit more often. But like I said, man, you know, I'm here smoking a wood with you guys. You know, I love my flavors, you know, I love just lighting it up, you know, and just easing the mind, you know, hang out with my lady for a little bit. Read a book while smoking a little bit, and no, definitely calms me, man, because I got a lot of like I got a lot of problems with me, man. You know, I got a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of depression, so it kind of helps me out, man. You know, helps me out a lot mentally, more than physically.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, bro. I got anxiety, depression issues as well, and cannabis is a major help with that type of thing.
Yeah,
and you know, that makes sense. Makes sense. It's good you're not using it as you get, you know, closer to fight date, of course. You want to make sure your system's clean and everything.
Yeah.
But the CBD, you know, there's a lot of MMA fighters using CBD to recover from pain, from tinctures to creams. You mentioned you're vaping it. You know, that's actually the most effective way to get CBD, is because you have more CBD receptors in your lungs than anywhere else. But do you have any, like, luck using the creams for, like, muscle soreness or anything, or do you just stick with mostly vaping?
I live and die by that. I live and die by the creams, bro. The creams help save my life, bro, for real.
Okay.
I try to get them on my, I try to put that cream at least 2 or 3 times in my body, wherever I'm aching, wherever I have pain, if I have any injuries. Bro, like, I'll go through a bottle pretty quick, you know. Also don't use, I use the BioFreeze too. You know, just keeping that menthol, all that like hot icy stuff, you know.
Yeah, it actually makes a good combination. You get a little CBD, rub it in, and then top it off with that BioFreeze on top. I do that. That shit works good, man.
Yeah, dude, it's crucial, man. See, my body thanks me every time I put that cream on, man, because it's night and day, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, we're all blessed enough to live in states. You know, we're in Nevada, you're in California, we got legal cannabis, so we got access to, you know, a lot of the things that other people are still barred from in some places, unfortunately. But it's pretty cool that we can sit here and legally smoke and while we chat and talk about fighting. And where can our listeners find you on social media? Because I'm sure they're going to want to know. So what is your Instagram handle and anywhere else that you're on?
My Instagram handle is I want to say it's tricky, but it's fucking from one of these, man. I was damn near at the end of this. I was watching a movie, listening to some music, just being high, bro. It's kind of like a high conjunction, you know. But my Instagram name is Lieutenant.JimmyBrown. LT.JimmyBrown.
And what is that from?
I got that. I was watching an adult movie, the Silver Metal Jacket, the military movie. I was listening to Jimi Hendrix, and I just got done watching the 30 for 30 on Jim Brown. So I kind of put the main character, the lieutenant, as the part. Yeah. Jimi Hendrix, just because it's J-I-M-I, a little different spelling of Jimmy. And then you can never go wrong with Jim Brown, the running back from the Cleveland Browns, you know. So,
oh, for sure, man.
It's just all three great people.
That's an OG. You know what I'm
saying? Yeah. Top notch combo.
Got three.
Well, that's awesome. Well, and finally, I want to wrap it up with this. What do you want our listeners to know about you as a person and you as a fighter?
Me as a person, man, I'm really here fighting for like the underdogs, man. You know, I feel like I'm an underdog in a lot of these fights. Just because I am, like, these are my first fights, and I'm going against people that are 8 fights deep, you know, 7 fights deep, you know, 5+ fights deep, you know what I'm saying? So I'm here for the underdogs, man. I'm here for the people that don't think they can do something. As you know, I don't really have a lot of credentials to my fighting career other than my teams and the coaches that I train with. So I'm here for those people, man, that don't think they can do it. Because if I can do this, if I could be on Cage Warriors, my first fights, you damn near can do anything you want to, too, as well. You know what I'm saying? As a fighter, you know, you're going to see that in there. You know, you're going to see strategic scrap. You know what I'm saying? I don't go in there and just throw punches because I want to fucking knock the guy out. You know, I'm throwing it because I see something. You know, you can learn something in a short amount of time if you really put and you devote yourself and you devote your heart to it, you know? So, I'm really here for the underdogs, man. I'm really here for the people that don't think they can do something. I'm here for the people that are low in their life and don't think they can do anything at all. I was there at that point, too, for my depression as well. So I'm here for those motherfuckers, man. You know, you can do it, for real.
Well, that's awesome, Tyler. Thank you so much for joining us today. And everybody listening, be sure to tune in. It's going to be March 4th. You can catch it on UFC Fight Pass. That's the Cage Warriors card. Tyler Escoto versus Jamie Lynch. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, bro. I'd like to thank my my sponsors, Humble Imagination, Nuobi, my manager, Remington Steele. Thank you, bro. I appreciate you.
Absolutely.
My team, Premier Athos, Andre, Michael Perez, Zachary Shepard. I fucking love you guys, bro.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Thanks so much, man.
Have a nice day, guys.